Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Gina Buskirk, Central Kitsap.
Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. And actually, I would like to welcome Rick. This is your first official meeting, so thank you very much and welcome. Yes. And so with that, we have the adoption of the agenda. I guess any items there? Are we okay with the order that it's in? Okay, hearing none, I think we'll just move forward with the adoption. And then with that, I think we'll get right into the public hearing. And so, okay. There should be also the sign-up sheet on the back. I don't know if everyone picked that up. If you do want to speak at tonight's meeting, if you would, make sure your name is on the sign-up sheet. And when you do come up and talk, make sure you talk in the microphone, state your name and your address, if you would, for the record. And depending upon how many folks here, usually it's around 3 minutes that we allow for you. And is that going to be working tonight, the monitor, as far as the timing? Okay. So usually that'll come on showing, I think it goes into a yellow when you have a minute left, and then it goes red at the end of your 3 minutes. So if you would, try to stay within that time frame. But I think we're going to get Eric Baker, who may give us a little rundown prior to getting into the public hearing. Oh. Yes, we could do that. Since we're waiting, we're going to go ahead and do the adoption of the minutes from January 17th. Is there a motion for the adoption of the minutes?
Move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Previous meeting.
I'll second.
Second. Any discussion? Tom?
Yes, I know with interest that these minutes are coming in a timely fashion. That's very good. That's one thing that's very good. The other thing is the minutes actually show who made the motion, and that is also very good. I appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. Okay, with a motion and a second, no discussion, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Due to absence.
Did you catch that? Okay, thank you. And with that, we'll go into the public hearing. I guess prior to that, Eric, if you want to go ahead and maybe give us a quick intro.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Eric Baker. I'm with the Kitsap County Commissioner's Office. The Planning Commission has seen a version of this presentation a number of times. I will try to speed it up. It is intended just to provide context to the audience this time out. We're here tonight to discuss amendments to Title 17 of Kitsap County Code as it applies to transitory accommodation, boarding houses, and fitness centers. We'll start with the transitory accommodations. This is intended to address a ongoing homelessness problem and a number of homeless encampments that are being located in unsafe conditions around Kitsap County. This code is intended to provide an opportunity for both the public and private sector to help with this process. This will allow the private sector, such as churches and nonprofits, to participate in the development of these homeless transitory accommodations so that we can get these people into a safe condition and not out in the elements, etc. The main goals are here is to establish a clear and transparent review process for these types of homeless shelters. We want a process that's appropriate to the scope and size of each proposal. We want to ensure that we aren't asking too much of a project that is too small to really be that significant. But we want to make sure that we're addressing all the issues, and we really want to address public outreach so that if this is going to be located in a neighborhood, there is early and often public involvement about the proposal and what it may or may not mean. Also, the Board of County Commissioners is very interested in the permit processing being as easy and as inexpensive as possible to ensure that the money is spent on the actual homeless shelters themselves, not on permit fees, et cetera. Obviously, the funding for a number of these endeavors are quite lean in a lot of ways. There's a lot of volunteer effort, but we want to ensure that this can be turned around as quickly as possible, but also in a cost-effective manner. The downside of the temporary permits is the first word in that, temporary, is that they are only good for 6 months with an opportunity for an additional 6-month period, or as I say here, 180 days with an additional 180-day extension. These are administrative decisions made by the director of the Department of Community Development, and then can be appealed to the hearing examiner by anybody with standing. These temporary permits may be made permanent with an administrative conditional use permit, but that is only allowed to be applied for after the first 6 months, so that we can ensure what the project, how the project is going, how the folks are being cared for, and what impacts there may or may not be in the neighborhood. So there are roughly five types of accommodations that are located in this code, the first of which is a small transitory accommodation, which allows up to 10 shelters or 25 persons. There's the large transitory accommodation, which is allows up to 40 shelters and up to 50 people. The safe park, which is a allowance in existing parking lots for folks to park their vehicles and recreational vehicles to live in overnight. It isn't intended for them to be there all day long, but it is a more get-in safe in the evening for singles, couples, families, things of that nature. And then indoor facilities. That is the largest and is intended to be located within a existing building or some other existing structure. It can house up to 75 persons. There are review and conditions that will come along with each one of these that I'll cover here in a moment that, again, is commensurate with the scope that is being proposed. The last is the single family accommodation. It's the smallest version, and I'll cover that a little bit more separately. So the basic requirements for these transitory accommodations is that there's a host agency that is responsible for the site. They may not necessarily own the property, but they have control of the site. It, oftentimes that would be the church or the nonprofit. They're in, they have to ensure that the folks who are residing here are meeting the code of conduct, are not creating nuisances, things of that nature, but most importantly, that they are receiving case management. This is not intended to be a long-term place for folks to stay, that we want to get them out of this condition into other housing. And through case management, which includes employment, it includes mental illness, it includes the mental illness help, substance abuse in many cases, things of that nature, is very important. And the host agency, as being tied to this and responsible for this, will help make that a reality. Conditions appropriate to the scale. A large transitory accommodation requires a communal tent for cooking and gathering. That isn't necessarily a place where food is prepared for them, but it is a place for them to come and make their own food so that we don't have to worry about folks cooking inside of tents or cars, things of that nature, which can create a hazard. And then all of these, again, going back to the public outreach, early and often public involvement, they require signage, a community meeting held before the application is submitted, and public notice. So these are all required elements for the neighborhood to be able to be involved in the process to ensure that their issues are addressed up front. The approval of these temporary permits can come with a whole host of conditions intended to ensure that the use is compatible with the surrounding area. The property has to be large enough to accommodate the use, adequate on-site utilities, sewer, water, garbage, electricity. Sewer can come in a number of different formats as approved by the health district. Screening from neighboring properties, that could either be the entirety of the facility or particular elements of the facility. Oftentimes the bathroom facilities need to be screened from neighboring properties in particular. Availability of support services, this goes back to the case management. That is the most important element of this to ensure that we are actually helping people out of homelessness to the best of our ability versus just only providing them a safe place to stay. And then we're looking at availability of transit. A number of these people do not have vehicles. Actually, a vast number do not have vehicles, and they need to be able to get to various services that they need, jobs, things of that nature as well. I mentioned the code of conduct again. That is the rules of the facility, what you can and can't do. That may vary from facility to facility. Some may be very strict, indicating no drugs, no alcohol. May only allow certain folks, whether it be singles or couples or things of that nature. But that is not being stipulated by the code. It really is open-ended to what the host agency is willing to take on. And then any other conditions appropriate to address on-site circumstances. Not every site in Kitsap County is the same. The idea that I can create a bunch of bulk regulations and conditions right now is not realistic. So the last one is the single family transitory accommodation. This really isn't meant for a host agency to kind of create a larger encampment. This really is meant for a family who knows another family or a friend who is in need of some place to stay. So a single family is allowed to handle one recreational vehicle or two membrane shelters to handle up to two households and can be done on a piece of property. The permitting for this is lesser, as again, the impacts are lesser. This is a type one decision, which is an administrative decision by the board, by the director of the Department of Community Development. It also has limited noticing requirements. But again, these are intended to be temporary, 6 months with a possible 6 month extension. A single family is the only type that is not allowed to become permanent, as the idea that this is not necessarily intended to be a full homeless encampment. It's intended to handle specified small scale issues that just come up in life. I know a family, they need some time, they then move on. I don't necessarily solicit a new family to come and live on the piece of property.
Eric, question?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, in a scenario like that, there are times where, you know, when a plat is developed with 40 homes, so come with it, CCNRs, HOA, right?
Yes.
Which one's going to overrule in a, you know what I mean? Because
Generally, the Department of Community Development is not in the business of enforcing CCNRs, though obviously the CCNRs are going to be enforced by the Homeowners Association, et cetera. I would be surprised if any of these facilities are going to be looking to be set up and take on that kind of responsibility. But I will say, in regards to conformance with CCNRs, that is not something that is planned in this code or should be expected from the Department of Community Development.
But if I live in a housing development and I have a homeless friend, mm-hmm. and the county says so,
just because something is consistent with zoning code does not mean it is necessarily consistent with CCNRs, conditions, easements, things of that nature. That is a good point and something that should appear on all application materials, indicating that approval by the county does not necessarily mean approval from other entities, and you should research that. That is something that we really
have in the process. Yeah, I think that, you know, somewhere along the way, there needs to be a CYA at one end or the other of that in the scenario where, I mean, I'd hate to think of it, but couldn't HOA sue the county because the county said so? You know, that's all I'm thinking of.
I think that is an excellent idea and something that should be in the application materials, and I will make sure I work with the Department of Community Development, Jim Bulger, and Scott Diener to ensure that it occurs, if this is adopted, of course. Another concept that's in this code is the concept of boarding houses. This allows the rental of individual rooms for long-term use in residential zones, but this is only urban residential zones. One thing I did also leave out about the transitory accommodations, those are also only allowed in our urban zones. Again, the idea of these is they need to be nearby services, and the services are located in the urban areas. So putting someone out in Seebeck does not necessarily help them get services unless the services are going to come to them. So boarding houses, much like the transitory accommodations, are only allowed in urban zones, including urban low. This is not necessarily only intended for homeless folks. This is really intended to be a housing type. Oftentimes, folks can't afford or cannot find multifamily housing that can be young, that can be old. This would be an opportunity for people to share a residence, and that residents would be able to be, they, or they can serve, someone can serve meals or not. But otherwise, it is allowed for multiple individuals to rent multiple rooms. This is a kind of a step up above the homeless encampments and things of that nature and below multifamily housing or other rental properties such as that, market rate rental properties. And it does require adequate parking beyond that of a single family use, one spot per unit and one spot for any proprietor. So if you're going to rent out five rooms, you need five spots generally. A single-family residence only requires two. If there is going to be somebody on site to provide laundry services or food or something of that nature, that would be an additional spot. Generally, these types of uses tend to rub the neighborhood the wrong way as it applies to parking. And then lastly, an administrative conditional use permit is the process necessary to have one of these prior to occupancy. Lastly, that this one doesn't quite fit with the others, but is one that is being promoted at this point too. Kitsap County Code had omitted a fitness center of all kinds, large, small, micro, gyms, things of that nature, does not appear in code at all. So this is intended to rectify that situation. Not all fitness centers are the same. As I indicated, a YMCA is not the same, does not have the same needs, the same impacts as a CrossFit. And I know CrossFit is a trademark, but everybody knows what I'm saying. When I say micro gym, everyone kind of squints at me funny. They're differentiated by size, by their parking requirements. Obviously, the YMCA is going to have a large parking need. The micro gyms are usually based on classes where a small number of people come at one time, not a whole bunch of people doing nine different things on nine different machines. There is a parking limitation based upon square footage. A micro gym in certain zones can only be a 5,000 square feet to be able to be located in certain zones. They could be larger in others, such as commercial, regional commercial, neighborhood commercial, things of that nature. And then I think I just covered that. Large-scale and diverse centers are only allowed in commercial zones. Micro gyms would be allowed in just in commercial and employment zones. Those employment zones could include some of our Lammerds. This is not necessarily just an urban use. Our Lammerds have opportunities that are well-suited for micro gyms, and it would be allowed in, again, with that 5,000-square-foot limitation in those types of zones. Where are we going from here? After this delightful presentation of mine, we then have the Planning Commission hearing. A number of folks are here to talk about the three topics that I just presented on. After that, the Board of County Commissioner, the Planning Commission can elect to deliberate, or we can deliberate at a later date and come to a recommendation one way or another. The board is hoping to have their hearing on February 27th, so if we didn't deliberate tonight, we would be looking to deliberate at your next available Planning Commission meeting to be able to meet the February 27th deadline. Are there any questions? I know a number of you have heard this three times from me. I appreciate your patience on that, but if there are any other questions.
Yeah, just one question. Were all the timelines or the permit process up to 6 months or the 180 days?
That is only for the transitory accommodation. The transitory accommodations are all temporary. The others are intended to be permanent. Boarding house and fitness center are permanent use.
And then what about single family?
The single family is a temporary use, 6 months plus an additional 6 month extension. But that one is not allowed to become permanent, unlike the other transitory accommodations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No further questions? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have the sign-in sheet by chance? Okay, thank you. So with that, we'll open up the public hearing. And it looks like we have four names on here. The first name is Carolyn Hurst. And like I said, if you would, state your name and where you live for the record. And that little timer over there should be going as well for 3 minutes, okay?
I can't see it, barely. Okay, my name is Carolyn Hurst, and my address is 375 Northwest Sigurd Hansen Road in Paulsbo, and I'm here to address the fitness zoning. My husband and I, my husband's in the back, Steve Perry, and I should mention that we have our property manager, Daniel Morris, with Bradley Scott, and then CrossFit Paulsbo's owners, Tony Gaspari, and I apologize, Tony, if I butchered that, and Dave Lonegren are also here. We purchased the 5686 building in the Kennedy Business Park in September of 2015. We're here to voice our support to an amendment to the zoning code for type 3 LAMIRDSs. I don't know how you pronounce that. This amendment would add fitness centers of less than 5,000 square feet in size as a permitted use. Steve and I are longtime Kitsap County residents. We own a small business. He also works at Keyport, the engineering station. when we purchased the building in September of 2015, CrossFit Paulsbo was already an existing tenant, and there was also a tenant in the building at that time that was a wrestling academy, and prior to that, there'd been a gymnastics center. We purchased the building from the credit union and the Kitsap Credit Union, and we were new to all this, so we didn't verify that everybody had occupancy permits. We knew a little bit about the zoning. We knew our use as a publishing company was allowed, and we assumed the other uses had been allowed as well. Barker Creek Publishing, my company, owns or occupies half of the building, and then we rent the other half, and we're very dependent on that rental income to pay our property taxes, which are in excess of $18,000 a year, and our building loan and other expenses. The catalyst behind the request to amend the zoning came when we learned that a micro gym was not an allowed use, nor did it appear anywhere in the zoning code. So we reached out to Rob Gelder at that time to see what the remedy might be. In talking with the other tenants and building owners in the business park, all have stated that CrossFit Paulsbo positively enhances the overall climate of the business park. At our recent Building Owners Association meeting, all owners present voiced their support to the zoning amendment change and commented on what a good neighbor CrossFit Paulsbo has been. Yesterday, one of our neighbors, Clark Bowen of CB Nuts, who owns the building adjacent to ours, also sent a letter voicing that to Rob Gelder's office. Over and above this one specific business, we know that there is demand in North Kitsap for businesses like CrossFit Paulsbo, but there are limited locations where they are a permitted use. Amending the zoning code would benefit us as the building owners, CrossFit Paulsbo, of course, who would very much like to remain in their current location, other building owners within our zoning classification, other micro gyms looking to locate in the north end of the county, and countless Kitsap County residents who are looking to lead more active and healthy lives. And I thank you for your time and consideration. That's all I have.
Questions? Go ahead, Aaron.
The current, my office building is across Mender from you, down the hill behind CB Nuts, so I know the area. The current zoning of your building is what?
It is, we're a rec zoning, LAM.
They're in the Lamrit.
A Lamrit.
Right.
Right. Okay.
But everything in there is commercial use, right?
Yeah, and you know, some of the uses that are allowed, which, you know, why we feel it's just kind of silly that micro gyms haven't, I think it was an oversight, I really do. Some of the other buildings that are allowed is a high turnover restaurant, a pet shop, a retail nursery, a kennel or pet daycare, a regular people daycare center, all would have much higher impact on the office park than the small micro gyms do. So,
okay. More questions? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Next on the list, looks like Noah, and is it Israel? It's kind of tough to read. I'm sorry.
Thank you. My name is Noah Israel, and I live at 32746 Hoffman Road in Kingston. And one of the issues that came up in my mind in relationship to how the rural boarding is excluded in both as an opportunity for both people and potential residents that have an opportunity to experience rural living and all the opportunities that it affords from supporting local agriculture and the people and all the people that have find it difficult to staff people and all those therapeutic opportunities that have been proven to in so many ways, from Veterans Administrations to psychological analysis, that you know, direct contact with land, plants, animals is highly influential and therapeutic in addressing some of the fundamental problems and create opportunities for people to grow food and to really have it. So to exclude that opportunity from people on both sides of the fence is, and also the other thing that stuck out to me in relationship to the auto park, to have it be only an overnight accommodation puts an undue burden on very poor people to move vehicles on a daily basis. We typically, in our affluent positions, don't consider that every time you move one of those vehicles can be $10, you know, even if you move it a very short distance. And that's a big impact on people that have, you know, that are already extremely stressed because of this whole situation. So we're going to create those things. So I feel like there has to be a balance between the intention to not have it be, you know, multi-year, long-term occupancy, but to really take into consideration the economic impacts by the subtleties of how you structure and language these ordinances. The other is, I feel like we are living in a time of exponential technology development, and I feel like there should be a real clear consideration and direction to the departments to use really state-of-the-art technologies in evaluating particular sites on all levels, because the permitting processes, for the most part, have not kept up to the tools that we have available to reduce the costs of the permitting process, and so to really encourage the departments to look to apply state-of-the-art solutions to problems that present themselves in addressing health and welfare issues.
So okay, thank you. That's questions?
My 2 cents. Questions?
Tom?
Yes. Could you be specific on what changes you would like to see in the present code that would address your particular concerns?
In the language?
Yes.
Okay, challenge me. Well, to include in the boarding ordinance, to include rural availability. I mean, to exclude it to me is really overstepping. I'm sorry. It's specifics of language. I have to get back to it. On that
thank
one.
You.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Eric?
Require the folks to leave the following morning. I was confusing it with the safe park we have on the fairgrounds, which does have that requirement. The code as currently written does not require the folks to move their vehicles every evening, though a host agency, etc., may create that type of scenario, as there are benefits to that. But again, it's not required by the code, and I apologize for that error.
Okay.
Is there, if it's not one night, is there a defined timeline, or is that up to the oversight of the property?
That'd be up to the host agency.
Thank you for that clarification. Let's see. Next up looks like Jackie Fotik. Okay.
Good evening. My name is Jackie Foytek, and my address is 991 Northeast Marwood Drive, and I'm from Bremerton. It's a pleasure to be here this evening. I am the Housing Solutions Center manager with KCR. Been there about 5 years, and I'm here today to speak in favor of this ordinance. Last year we saw about 3,800 people that identified themselves as homeless or at risk of being homeless, and that's about 500 more than we saw the year before. So obviously homelessness in Kitsap County is growing. The reason that they identified mostly was the lack of affordable housing or economic reasons, along with mental health issues or substance abuse issues or the other two things that they did. But additionally, but mostly it was the lack of affordable housing that they cited. So this ordinance does address temporary housing. It talks about Safe Park, it talks about RVs, it talks about boarding houses. It's things that are temporary housing. And we understand that it is temporary, but that's so important to everything that we do. I had a lady call me right before I left, and she had moved into an apartment 4 years ago, and her rent was $450. She's a senior citizen. Her income is $690. She just got a notice that her rent is now going to raise to $640. She makes $690. She's terrified. She's figuring she's going to be homeless. She doesn't know what to do because there isn't any affordable housing for her right now that she can move into. She, honest to goodness, doesn't. She was asking me, what, you know, can I move into a shelter? Is that my next step? So, I mean, it's Kitsap County. There's not enough affordable housing, and rents are rising every single day. So I think there's just a huge community out there that really doesn't know what their next step is. So having temporary housing is important, and to keep working on affordable housing is also important. This ordinance is the fact that it comes with case management, the fact that you're going to help people get into temporary housing, and then you're going to case manage them, because the bottom line is we do need permanent housing for people to just have them in places where, like, whether it's an RV park or whether it's a Safe Park is great, but it's also getting them in a position where the resources are all in one place. And that's important, because then somebody can be there with them and can case manage them. And that's really important, because then it does lead to permanent housing. So we're working on the permanent fix, but I think this ordinance does address the temporary things. And that's, right now, it's really important, whether in, you know, in Port Orchard, whether in, you know, Silverdale, whether, you know, wherever you are, it is something that needs to be addressed. And I think this ordinance does a great job to do that. So thank you for your time.
Questions? Looks like we got one. No?
Well, I'd just say thank you for taking the time to be here and share the statistical information that you have from your daily job. I know it, being in Poulsbo Rotary, we're sadly creating 8 new domestic violence units, triples the number of domestic violence units in the county while we turn down 1,000 people a year. So many situations that need a good hard look.
Thank you. And the last name we have today, Dave Lonergan. Thanks.
My name's Dave Lonergan. I live at 29991 Scenic Drive, Poulsbo. And I'm one of the owners of CrossFit Poulsbo. And if I knew I was going to be speaking, I would have written a statement. I'd like to just throw out something like how we got here. 2 years ago, I invested in Tony and another owner in this CrossFit. At that time, I was not a managing owner. I was just an investor. One of our owners left last year. I purchased him so we could make sure we had control of what we were going. So I didn't know we were having an occupancy issue until May, and I didn't know that it had gone as far as it did, and I didn't find out that we had a zoning issue until September. I do know that over a period of time that we tried many times to complete the occupancy process, but we were confused, to say the least. But CrossFit, it's not just an exercise facility. It's a facility where we bring people in, we build community within the organization. We train people how to lift weights safely. We teach them how to have a better life in their eating. CrossFit also tries to be a good community neighbor, not just in a business park, but within the community, helping out in other social functions that might happen. And I think that this area of the county is underserved, and that type of facility. Now, what happened a couple months ago, we were given a 10-day cease business order. We complied, and we're out of business for about 10 days before we got an extension to the end of this month. And it's hurt us financially. So if you're going to not discuss this until February 27th, can you give us another extension for a month or two, whatever it takes, until the decision on this zoning change takes place?
You know, I don't think us as the Planning Commission, because really we're not quasi-jurisdictional, so I don't think we actually have the power to do that, to be quite honest with you. We can maybe
recommend it.
Put in a good word, but I don't think we actually have, like I said, the ability to do that here. Mm-hmm. Eric?
With Scott Diener, we believe that if for some reason it were to bleed into March, there would be the ability to have an extension until this has been properly resolved or adjudicated at least.
So quick question for you, Eric. So there has not been a ruling, an existing ruling on gyms in the county?
We have... changed the code over a number of times. These gyms have been classified a number of different things in the rural areas, and sometimes in the urban areas they were called private recreational facilities, which are really more campgrounds and park and recreational vehicle parks, things of that nature. When we updated the code most recently, we removed anything that you could even squint and be able to see a fitness center. From that was discovered through the CrossFit situation. It was something that was also in the hopper to be addressed, which is where we have a whole series of code amendments that need to be done. This brought it to our attention again, and as I was going through this process already, we attached the fitness center fix along with it.
Okay, so really there was no mechanism for them to get a permit.
No, they have gone to every effort since they knew that there was an issue to do right. So, and the code did not allow it. The code was silent on the topic. It didn't necessarily say no, but it did not say yes.
Okay, so what led us to say to these facilities that you have to shut down?
What led to it is that there was no land use that was received for it. I'm not certain what the other situations were on that. I can get with the Department of Community Development. I can get you greater details.
So I see a fault on the community planning that they had a hole, they didn't realize it, and they're penalizing the companies that are, in all fairness, they thought they were doing the right thing.
I do believe that there's a number of conditions associated with this. I don't have all the details. I know that both the department and have been working with these folks to make sure that they are able to stay open, and I believe you are open at this time. But obviously having to close down for any length of time would be a gross hardship that you're looking to avoid if at all possible. That's what this process is hoping to address.
Okay. It seems a little bit on the unfairness side that county comes in and starts throwing their weight around when they created the problem.
I'm not quite certain the origin of the problem, but I could see how that is a possible viewpoint.
Okay.
I guess another question. With the enactment of this ordinance, are they going to have to come through? Is it just a change in use? Is that what they're going to submit for?
It's a permitted use, so it's a change of use. Again, type 1 decision. No additional land use required.
Okay. And the thought is they'll hopefully be able to stay in business as they continue to go through that, or is that it's not an over-the-counter, or is it an over-the-counter?
Not necessarily an over-the-counter, but it does have a very short duration.
Okay.
And we do want to work with them to ensure that we are not creating additional hardship as we move through this process.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, so that's the last name on the sheet. I guess I will extend it. If there's anyone else who would like to come up, please. And once again, please state your name and address for the record.
All right. I'm Jeffrey Nordberg. My address is 3718 Longhorn Drive, Bremerton, Washington. And so the reason I'm here, I met with Mr. Gelder last week, and he kind of gave me the idea, put the idea in me and my client's head that it'd be a good idea to attend tonight. And so what we're doing is trying to put up two data centers in the North Kitsap area. Now, the data centers, although they're outright permitted in commercial industrial, there's not any commercial industrial stuff available to size to house these facilities, so we've been looking in rural employment center. Now, it's kind of to my understanding that we can operate there with a conditional use permit, and as of right now, the use that I have identified is 250 10,000 general office and management services, 10,000 square feet or larger. So the building is large, and the data centers themselves provide very good economic impact for the community altogether. And so, really, I'm not sure what I'm doing here because this was about boarding houses and what, but Robert Gelder, like I said it'd be probably a good idea to come in and state our piece. So.
Well, I think you might want to at least maybe touch base with Eric or Mr. Bulger there and get some information from them, maybe find out who you should talk with at DCD to try to work through your problem and see about getting this whatever code modified or just a clarification in the use table.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Well, I guess with that, we will go ahead and close the public hearing. And I guess the question is whether we want to enter into deliberations this evening, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
No. About the transitory. Eric, you did a great job on the code in terms of the concern with the transitory housing is neighborhood. Give the opportunity for the neighbors to come in and talk about what they want to see and that sort of thing. And the code is great. Until we get past the temporary period, the trial period, and then we're going to go to, as I understand it, an administrative CUP review. Now, so we've had this trial period, but the ACUP, to my recall, doesn't provide for another public hearing. And so here we've done is we've had this trial in the community for 6 months, and we're saying, okay, we're going to make it permanent, but neighborhood, yeah, there'll be a sign on the property that says there's something going on, but there won't be a hearing, there won't be an opportunity to hear from you guys about how do we do. Let's hear from the neighborhood. Should we make this permanent and long-term? So the question, the suggestion I would have is that if we're going to take this transitory project and make it permanent, let's add a requirement for another neighborhood meeting. Let's make sure that the neighbors get a chance to say, hey, here's what we think about how you did. And so, again, other than that, the focus on making sure the neighbors get some input I thought was great in the code. Just another thought.
I think that is something that could be modified in code with recommendations from the Planning Commission.
So just out of curiosity, I realize you don't want to go as far as a conditional use permit because of the cost of the permit. So I guess I'm just curious, the idea of having a more informal neighborhood hearing, obviously that then would be attended by the director or representative of the director. She would then incorporate the concerns that may be voiced into the conditions of the administrative CUP. Is that kind of how you see the process then occurring?
Yes, there is a portion in this code that could be tagged onto the requirement for a additional community meeting consistent with the community meeting that is required for the temporary permits.
And that, Mr. Chair, I think you're exactly right. I don't think we need to go to a CUP, but we can use the same hearing we did for the temporary as we did on the permanent and just say, hey, do it one more time without having to go to full-blown CUP.
Okay. Well, I think that's borderline deliberation at this point, right?
Yes, I think we might want to put a motion on the table that gets us started.
Yeah, and so I guess let's go ahead and open up deliberations.
Okay. I would move that the Planning Commission accept the changes that Title 17 as presented, subject to any suggestions that this board may approve.
Second.
Okay, I guess maybe a point of clarification when you say the changes, are you referring to the changes that Mr. Shattuck has recommended?
Puts the issue on the table. Now we can go ahead and discuss it. And if we wish to change anything or add anything, we may do that by motion.
Okay. Mr. Shattuck, would you like to formalize your question into a motion?
I would. Mr. Chairman, I would move that the section of the proposed transitional housing that deals with requirement for a neighborhood meeting be amended to provide that a neighborhood meeting would be held both before the initial temporary approval and then a second neighborhood meeting be held before any final ACUP action on converting that to a permanent use.
I'd second that motion.
Okay. I guess trying to get maybe another clarification. Would this be the case any time there is a administrative conditional use permit required to go from temporary to permanent?
Yes, I think probably on page 33, subsection 3 here, I think you could probably add an extra sentence to the end of that paragraph that highlights the neighborhood, the requirement prior to a director decision on any administrative conditional use permit, a neighborhood meeting shall be held and all input taken into consideration in the approval of, or in the consideration of the administrative conditional use permit.
I think it's a great clarification.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion?
Just a quick question. Is there a mechanism in there for the community, the neighborhood, to present their issues to the agency, the host agency?
I believe that's what this neighborhood meeting would be, but also an administrative conditional use permit notifies everyone within 400 feet. Written testimony is allowed at any time during the comment period. This would allow for oral testimony as well prior to the director making a decision.
Well, I'm thinking of if you're in a temporary situation and you're going to wait 6 months and then another 6 months to get to the permanent situation, in between there are going to be issues that come up. Do we have a mechanism to give the community a chance to bring that to the host agency and have it settled quickly? Because nothing ticks people off more than, well, you heard me once, and then all this stuff happened, and by the time that 6 month comes up, they've had it. You know, nobody's addressed any issues. If we can solve those issues as they come up, it's more likely to succeed.
Yeah, in general, the host agency is going to be very cognizant of the neighbors' concerns because the neighbors can make their administration of the site very, very difficult. Most of the host agencies, including some that are in the room here today, are very connected with the neighborhoods in which they use. I expect that is part of their business model. I think the idea being is that at the beginning, before this ever is created, you have a community meeting, you have signage, and you have public notice. The temporary use starts going for the first 6 months. 6 months and 1 day, someone can submit for a permanent administrative conditional use permit along with the temporary permit extension. So hopefully by the time that temporary permit extension is over, you will then have an administrative conditional use permit. But during that period of time, not only is the host agency working with the neighbors, there is that additional neighborhood meeting and additional written testimony period to weigh in on anything that they don't believe that the host agency has adequately addressed for that initial 6 month period. That's why we have it in the code that you can't apply for it as a permanent use until we've seen it work for at least 6 months.
And I guess I think that's going to be responsibility of the host agency to be proactive to address the concerns of the neighborhood so that things don't fester and become, you know, maybe blown out of proportion or become an issue that could have been addressed earlier. So
I'm just not sure if it needs to be somehow spelled out that that's a recommendation or, you know, I would hope that the host agency would be you know, sensitive enough and smart enough to make sure they're paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah, and I don't think we necessarily want to codify, you know, intermediate meetings or anything like that. So
there is in this a termination clause that it is the type of thing that a neighborhood would actually move towards, which to me that is the impetus for them not to ensure that they're working very closely with the neighborhood. Otherwise, whatever land use, temporary or administrative conditional use permit, could be revoked under certain circumstances.
Okay. Any further modifications or changes?
In general, or there was a motion and second on that?
Oh, you're right, correct. Any further discussion on that particular motion? Okay, well, let's deal with that motion then. All those in favor of the motion as presented? Opposed? Is unanimous. Further modifications?
Well, I guess I'd like to discuss the single-family transitory accommodation. I do have some concerns about that one. When I look at some of the other parts of this code, they're sort of on a bigger scale, host agencies coming in, and I recognize that the people can have guests in their homes. But it seems a bit of a stretch to me to be codifying it, the county involving themselves to codify it. Now, there was some mention about the neighborhoods that have the CCNRs, you know, for people who I suppose have nice enough homes or expensive enough homes to belong to a neighborhood that can block that. Maybe they feel more comfortable. But in a situation unlike maybe a religious organization that's going to host something on their property, you're talking about potentially one neighbor, and the only other people that might be interested in listening or paying attention even are just the immediate surrounding neighbors. I don't see any limitations. You know, can this be in a front yard, in a backyard? How big is the lot? You know, if I come home one day and I find two tents pitched on the side of my neighbor's house, that certainly might cause some concern. Now, I know there should be proper notice and hearings, but I guess in my opinion, I would like to strike the single-family transitory accommodation. I think that if people do want to have guests, that is their personal decision to have guests at their home, but I don't know that the county should be involving themselves with that. And I just have some concerns that, you know, it's not going to apply equally in all neighborhoods for all people.
I think I would second Mr. Buskirk's concern with regard to it not making, like a CCNR does make reference to, right? I can have an RV, but it's got to be parked behind a fence line, behind the front line of my house, and can only be there for 7 days. There's a lot of lack of clarity in offering up this as an opportunity. I think that's really got to be studied.
So we have a second. Correct? You just second the motion? I mean, is this an official motion or a question?
I would second the concern.
I would make it a motion to strike that portion of it without more, I think, proper vetting or more details. I feel like it's a bit vague and broad. Oh, I'm sorry. To the single-family transitory accommodation portion of the code that's been proposed, 17.505.040 sub A.
Okay, so now there's a motion. Is there a second?
I would second that.
Okay. Discussion. And if I could kind of maybe ask for a clarification, I guess the genesis of this, what is the thought? Because I know, as Aaron indicated, I was thinking perhaps this did give the approval for, as you say, a community that does have a homeowners association to say this is okay. Obviously, you can't do this in rural, so in 5 acres, this wouldn't be allowed potentially. If whatever, you have a trailer beside your house and your brother-in-law is homeless. Well, I mean, is that actually not allowed or should be permitted by the county? Because I guess I would have to agree with Gina. That's more of a kind of a decision of the homeowner as opposed to something the county should be getting involved in. So where does this come from, I guess, this need?
This is honestly, when we've had this in previous iterations, this was the use that was most likely. And actually, in Kitsap County, it is illegal to live in a tent or in a recreational vehicle, except under very certain specific purposes. So this, in these circumstances, would allow for it with a permit and with review in certain conditions. that would need to be put in place to ensure it is consistent with the neighborhood. That being said, it is a more of a ministerial decision than it is an administrative decision. And the idea is that it is a temporary use only.
Further discussion?
Again, the other thing is, I understand it is, Gene, I appreciate what you're saying about, boy, I have a guest here, but this is for single-family housing that's actually controlled by the host agency, and second, that the host agency must still be involved with managing. So it's not like I can say, hey, I'd like to make a little extra money, I'll put, you know, who wants to put a tent in my front yard? It has to be a host agency, and the host agency has to have some relationship. Do I have that right?
Unfortunately, the host agency doesn't apply to the single family.
Single person, right?
We do have a gentleman who could speak to this to provide some additional clarity if it is the interest of the Planning Commission.
Please? Yes, please.
I'm Joe Summers with the Kitsap Rescue Mission, a resident of Port Orchard. And when we put the original temporary ordinance into place, the reason this came up is this goes on a lot already. We know that. But the one thing that we're looking for, the reason that, and it's a very simple permit, it's so that we can get these people through the permit process. Now we can find them and we get them involved with case management, get them to go to Housing Solutions and register. They're homeless, but most of them do not see themselves as that. This process was put in there simply so we can identify where they're at and get case management involved, get them involved with Kitsap Community Resources and Housing Solutions. We never brought this into place to open this up except for religious organizations that may want to house one of their members or somebody at their facility. With this permit comes the issue that they have to be available to all services. If the RV doesn't have utilities that allow for showers and toilet and so forth, the house has to be available to them to do that. If the RV doesn't have, or if they're in a tent and they don't have a way to cook, the house has to be available for them to do that. That's all part of the permit process. This is to make it, a lot of people are doing this already. We all know that. But this is to make it so that we're not just, okay, well, little brother, here's a tent, you can stay in my backyard. The right way to do it is to get them connected with all the services while we're trying to bring them in to the fold and help them.
Are you reaching out right now to people that are living in this situation?
Yes, there's my job at the rescue mission is I'm the outreach manager. I'm the person that goes out and stomps through the brush and finds all these people. There's a lot of them already living in that environment. There's a lot of people that come into the Kitsap Rescue Mission's day room and the Salvation Army's breakfast and lunch program that are living this way. They're living on somebody's property. There's a couple that I reached out to in Bremerton in December that had lost their house. Them and their two children are living in a tent in their mother-in-law's backyard because there's no room in the house. We don't know that unless they call us. Nobody knows that. This permit process gives us one more way to reach out to them and know where they're at. And it puts a timetable in place. That's the only reason for this process that is in this transitory accommodations.
But,
Joe?
But is that really a permit thing or actually a notification to people that this they need the services and here's how you get them? Well, I don't understand why we need a permit.
Without a permit, we'll never see them unless they call out to one of us. They get our card one way or another. They meet us on the street. The reason for this permit is it does a couple of things. Not only does it put them in contact with the process and case management, it puts a timeline on it so they're not going to be there forever. I mean, I know of RVs that are beside somebody's house. They've been there so long, the tires are flat. They're still plugged in, and they're still living in them. There's one off Bethel Avenue. The guy's been in it 17 years that I'm aware of. Now, is that what we want? We want to keep letting them do this, or do we want to try and put something in place, the reason for this, put something in place that will give us the opportunity to reach them and help them?
But from Gina Busker, for the record, but from a county perspective, are they willing to go in and physically remove somebody off of someone else's private property? I mean, at this time, you could show up at the door and the homeowner could say, you're not coming on my property. You're not
they can do that
to.
When they have a permit that expires, too.
Correct. But is the county really, are they going to really go pull people out of somebody's backyard?
That's an issue for the sheriff that you'd have to ask him. Well, I don't do that work for him. Some people think I don't do that. I go out and help.
Well, yes. Now we're into enforcement.
No, we're not into enforcement.
Well, no.
Typically many of these things come into line with a border sitting fence of discussion of, is this a civil discussion or is it something else? And I'm confused as to why getting a permit, which allows the county to collect a fee, somehow puts them in a civil system where they get help for Meals on Wheels or mental health. I don't see the connection.
When they get into the system, then we all are part of this. That's the whole reason.
So you get a record?
The host agency knows, and there's no host agency involved in the single family.
Right.
But part of that is their registration with Housing Solutions.
Where does it say in the stuff we were printed for tonight that by getting this permit, they end up on a list for KCR and mental health and all the other things they need, so it's not permanent?
Page 34, number 8. Applicant must attest that hosted households occupying the recreational vehicle or membrane shelters are actively engaged in local social services or homeless housing providers such as Housing Solutions Centers at Kitsap County, the Homeless Coordinating Entry Program.
And they don't have to, by law, accept that invitation, correct?
Correct.
That's correct.
This gives us a connection point. That's the whole purpose of this. If they're doing it already, this gives us an opportunity to have a connection point. That's the purpose.
Why not?
I really wish you wouldn't strike it for that reason.
Why not make it a registration only? Why a permit?
I think in general what this does... what this does allow is, as he indicated, this is happening right now in a number of different places. It happens in the rural areas. It happens in the urban areas. What this is intending to do is, through the permit process, to hopefully minimize those impacts on the surrounding neighborhood. If you take a look at the various conditions that they have to meet, they have to have restroom, water, and power accommodations. I can tell you, with 5 years in code enforcement, many, many, many places do not have that, and they exist today. This does require a permit to become legal. It is not necessarily something that can just be done easily. So the idea that people are going to be flaunting it, usually people don't do that in association with a permit. And when looking at the conditions that are imposed here, it hopefully will address some of the issues and the concerns. Though I do understand the concerns about, especially on small lots, having some of these things potentially appear. But again, we are in a semi-crisis situation, we are in a crisis situation regarding homelessness, and this is one of the ways that people are using today to be able to address homelessness issues without any conditions or any connection to case management.
Right now, what would the cost of that permit look like?
Say $300, $350. I guess I'd have to go back. There's a number of fees that'll kind of add up. But
my struggle again, I think, aside from small lot concept and degradation of neighborhood, I kind of like the idea of registration, not to parallel them with anything like, being a sex offender, but the idea that you need to register if you need help, period, right? Just for any services, that makes sense to me. But the idea that I should pay $300 that could have gone to food for them, to the county to be nice, or $300 to be homeless, no.
The downside is that it's illegal to do so otherwise. So at this point, it is...
But it's unaffordable to be homeless legally? That'd be the alternative. Interesting, right?
That's true. Wrong direction. Wrong direction. A registration. I would gladly give $350 to the rescue mission to help find those people than to give it to the county.
Right.
To the county. But
yeah, I mean, Fishline could feed 100 people for a week with $300 because of their buying power concept. So, yeah, misdirection of funds.
Well, go ahead if we're still discussing.
Gina Basker, for the record. again, I think that I'm liking that thinking better. I don't know right now. I'm thinking it through not only from, you know, passing the code, but from enforcement. So does that mean that the outreach people are going to go find the people during their outreach and then turn them into the county, and then they're going to be forced to pay $300? Or does that mean that county's going to be going and finding the folks?
We currently have a code enforcement system. We're currently restaffing. We were low on it for a period of time. But we do operate on complaints, and complaints do and will come in on these types of things regularly. We go out to the properties. These are civil fines of up to $475 a day. And it is the type of thing that we would like to avoid if at all possible. We do want to ensure that these folks are in, that they're in, and they have restroom facilities. Many of these do not, which is a further problem for the neighborhoods, et cetera. This has been in the last iterations of the emergency codes, and it has been the thing that has been utilized as an entry point to this type of program.
But
the program is I believe Kitsap Resources is here. They provide these connections. Now, is the county taking that permit, feeding that information to Kitsap Resources?
The permit is required to have a testing that they are connected with these folks. So the actual property owner is connecting up with these folks before they ever get the permit.
I just think it's backwards. Good. I think the resources needs to be brought in first. And then if there's a problem with how it's being set up for those people, great, let's go investigate and do code enforcement. But you're kind of going after people that are trying to be charitable. You know, and all we want them really to do is connect the resources to these people that need the help. You're kind of going the long way around.
Mr. Shattuck, got a comment? Question?
If code enforcement is going out there and identifying an issue, they'll write the letter, hey, you know, if you don't do something within 40 days, we're going to do something. There's nothing that prevents code enforcement from having a connection to the rescue mission and to other resources to make that connection without having somebody have to come down and pay $350. Hey, not only is this a problem, but here's a solution. Here's these people who can help you solve your problem without having to say, well, you're going to have to go out and get a permit. You're going to have to hook this up to a restroom, you know, and suddenly the homeowner or the homeless person saying, my God.
I kind of see where it's going to go. The person that made the offer, it's trying to help these people, will go, sorry about that, you're gone.
But
and we help too.
You had a question?
Well, I think there's enough contentiousness. My question was, is there a second to strike it as written?
I thought we had a second, so it went into discussion. Tom seconded. Okay, we've had anyone want to call the questions? We can go ahead and get on, or do we have more discussion? Okay. Well, hearing no more discussion, Tom.
Actually, we have potential for a amendment to the amendment, and that was promoted by Joe.
Well, I guess the amendment would be that because my thinking's kind of like the people that are doing this aren't necessarily going to even know that they need to go get a permit. And it's kind of like the fitness centers kind of going, what code, where? All of a sudden it pops up, and they're left high and dry. I don't see this going to be the panacea that we would think it is.
The code has been in place for over 20 years and has been enforced. So I'm like the CrossFit scenario where they fell into a gap. What we're trying to do is we're trying to find a legal mechanism for folks to do this in circumstances where we are serving a homeless need.
But you're taking money from the people that are trying to help them and keeping it in the county and not necessarily guaranteeing that they get the resources.
But would you like to propose an amendment to the motion?
I would like to see it. At this stage, I don't know how I'd want to rewrite it, because it's, you're proposing a permit, which I don't agree with. So I would strike it as written.
Are you asking or hopeful that staff might be able to come back with some other ideas? I know you
yes.
suggested, you know, it's kind of hard on the spot, but that they might come back with some alternative concepts or ideas.
Right.
I know in Bremerton, and it's not exactly the same, but we have had in the city of Bremerton a lot of problems with empty homes and people ending up in there and squatting. And so in those situations, we did a registration process. It's actually been hugely successful. The homeowners in those scenarios were happy to register their homes to have them kind of watched and to get resources at Certainly. Times in. So now it's different dealing with humans than with empty Yes. homes, of course. But what I'm thinking is something where if somebody is trying to help someone, which I think we all think is a good thing, but they're not being penalized by paying some fee, you know, trying to find something to address it, something that we can reach out to them and provide them information so they can get help to the people that need help. I don't know if staff would have any alternatives or would be willing to meet with the people that work in the area for, you know, other ideas. But it seems like that's maybe what we're looking for, is having some choices on how to deal with it.
I think probably the other options that you're talking about really fall outside the land use component, the registration system, et cetera, that as it moves out of land use, as it moves out of zoning, I think they're all good ideas, but really wouldn't be something to bring back to the Planning Commission, as it has no attachment to land use or things of that nature. At this point, if there is a significant concern amongst the Planning Commission about this concept, and there is no amendment that has a land use, a separate revised land use component to it, I guess that is probably the motion that should be run through.
I think the only way I could envision this working is that the county is as interested in donating to the cause and recognizing that proactive is better than reactive, and then dime a prevention, dollar a cure. If you got all that, you'd offer the permit for free because you just wanted it registered.
Yep. And that is allowed under this code, but the director can't do that. That can be done only to be done by the Board of County Commissioners.
And that would be my amendment.
Well, the fees are not a part of this particular code.
No, fees are a separate entity that is approved by a resolution. So,
and can be modified anytime.
Yes. Well,
yes, they can.
And the other point about this is, if there is a violation, you know, sanitary or whatever, we have the codes to enforce changes. If it's not legal and it's not, you know, sanitary or whatever is going on there, we can go, you know, land use says we can go in and solve that, correct?
Yes, though I guess I would characterize that as a reactive method versus a proactive method. Code enforcement is a very ominous type of thing that we would like to avoid if at all possible. This permitting process was intending to avoid reactive code enforcement type scenarios. But I do understand the issues that the Planning Commission has brought up.
So if I could, I think we've talked about this quite a bit. I think we're sending the message that staff will take back to the county commissioners that perhaps if they want to do this with either no fee or some other process, we, I guess, understand the idea and the merit, but this is not the mechanism to do it. So I think that message is being sent and that they can work towards that. So I don't know if we have anything else you want to comment on that, Mr. Shatter?
I was going to call for the question.
Okay. I guess since it's been a while, maybe restate just so we know the particular paragraphs or
After, just to restate the motion, after hearing the deliberation and the hope or that message, excuse me, we're trying to send. I'm moving to strike 17.505.040 transitory accommodations with regard to single family transitory accommodation from the proposed code Title 17 at this time. I guess I'll stop with that in the hopes they'll get the message and listen to the hearing.
Okay, and it was the seconded. So now, all those in favor of striking that particular section of the code? Opposed? Unanimous. So, any other proposed changes?
Was there a, I heard a proposal that the boarding houses be included in the rural areas.
That was a comment that was made, yes.
And I would ask Eric, is there any reason that it wasn't allowed into the rural area?
Two things. One, availability of services, but the predominant one is density. Generally, you're looking at lots out in the rural areas that are already non-conforming, and I guess one out of, four out of every five are already not meeting zoning. Bringing the idea of double or tripling the amount of folks who are going to be allowed in a home in the rural area confounds some of our other comprehensive planning issues associated with reasonable measures.
That's why.
But we're not increasing the building.
But we're increasing the number of people who are living in the rural areas.
True.
But a single home that's been converted to a boarding house, you wouldn't limit the number of human beings living in a single residence necessarily.
We generally do not.
The only impact I would see is parking. And then where are those resources?
But
a boarding house is not the same as a transitory house. Boarding house is something you can go into, set up. If you're a millionaire, you can go get a boarding room. So there's really, I don't see how the boarding houses really fit into needing to be near transit and all that.
No, I'd make the argument that it's about septic. Okay, you think about occupant load. Mm-hmm. Now, why we count pillows and not toilets, I'll never understand. Okay, you can have a 12-bathroom, 2-bedroom house on a 2-bedroom septic. Right, the idea is that we both can't sit on the toilet at the same time. I get that. But when you convert a house to a boarding house, you're admitting an occupancy level that is not handleable unless you're on sewer in most cases.
But wouldn't that be covered under the permitting?
Well, the concern that staff has, once again, is density. If we had this in, they're concerned if this was allowed by zoning, potentially when the comp plan would be amended, it would be appealed maybe for that one reason only. Correct?
Yeah, we're already in a situation where accessory dwelling units are a bone of contention on both sides. This is an accessory dwelling unit, depending on how many units you're looking at, times five. This is directing population that is and trips, et cetera, into the rural areas. These are points of contention that Kitsap County has fought over for a number of years, and we are actively trying to avoid that in the rural areas. So bringing out additional population into an area that we already arguably have more lots than we have need is going to confound the scenario.
So if I could just expect this, if you'd like to make the motion, please do. That's why
no, I wanted to discuss it to
okay.
See where I would.
But that's where staff is coming
right.
From. Okay. Any other changes? Okay. Hearing none, I guess we'll take a vote to go ahead and pass the ordinance as presented with the amendments. All those in favor? Opposed? Unanimous.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I just want to confirm the two changes that I'll be making. They'll be coming back in the form of findings of fact that will be then circulated to the Board of County Commissioners. The first was introducing an additional neighborhood meeting in any discussions of administrative conditional use permit as it applies to making these facilities permanent. Second of which is excising 17505.040A from the code. Clearly directing to the board that the cost elements associated with this and a number of other things from this discussion don't seem to match the purpose of this code. I expect that they will be reviewing the tapes of this for the additional nuance.
Aaron?
Just a quick question, since we have your ear and an audience that cares about this question. It seems like pretty much every Kitsap CrossFit, you know, which is on Highway 305, any of the CrossFits typically look at warehouse box type spaces, right, that are pretty unfinished. Kennedy matches that. I know Dan and Amy Hollingsworth, so I've been in that space and puked because of it. Thanks a lot. But the point is, was there a time where it was a permitted use where they are up on Bond Road today?
I'd have to go back and look at the code. It definitely would have predated 2006, and I'd have to figure out exactly when it was constructed as to whether it ever was legal.
And they're in a Lamoureux, but I guess my question is, the other seven CrossFits in Kitsap County, are they also not in compliance with the zoning code they're in?
It would all depend on exactly which zone they're currently located. Those that are located in commercial zones usually are going to have an easier time, because there's a series of commercial uses that you might be able to squint.
Compared to industrial, even though their spaces are very intentionally industrial.
That's exactly the situation that we're currently looking at.
Okay.
All right. Two comments. One, I guess I would like to say, as we're here, one of the major contributors to homelessness, obviously, is affordable housing. As we sit here and look at regulations, and those regulations that are increased the cost of construction do also affect affordable housing. So it's something that we need to consider when we look at those as well. So just something, some food for thought. Also, just want to say thank you to everyone that came in, that showed, that puts the time out to go ahead and help those within our community. So thank you very much. We certainly do appreciate that.
Thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you. Let's see. Next item on the agenda is rules of procedure. And instead of Mr. Diener, we have Mr. Bulger. Is this our procedure or just procedures in general?
This is your procedure.
Okay.
Although, having witnessed the previous agenda topic, I think you have procedure done pretty well from past planning commissions I've worked with in my history. So I'm here really just to give you all an introduction to the revised rules of procedure for the Planning Commission. Louisa had another conflict, Louisa Garbo, the director of the department, so was unable to be here. Oh, by the way, for the record, Jim Bulger, Department of Community Development. So what you were provided with your meeting information now is some revised rules of procedures. There's not a red line strikeout version of this, because these are wholly rewritten. These were put together by three different county offices, including the Department of Community Development, the Prosecutor's Office, and the Commissioner's Office, all contributed to this and its review. The department went out and actually looked at Planning Commission rules of procedures in many different jurisdictions around the region in compiling these. Many of the changes that you'll see are reflected really in the rules of handling business, using Robert's rules of parliamentary procedure for a lot of your decision making and motion making and those kinds of things. There will be an opportunity to talk more about this, I believe, at the training that is scheduled for the Planning Commission coming up on the 21st. This is actually a document that, along with the changes in procedures, you have a resolution, a draft resolution. These need to be adopted by the board for them to go into effect for the Planning Commission. One other change is that we're no longer specifying a meeting start time for your meetings. That is going to be covered under the noticing requirements. And I guess that's really about it for right now. Yes, sir.
I was reading Tom's comments on this. And the one issue that really struck me is the requirement to vote yes or no, and no clear path to recuse myself.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a site-specific change. I've represented the person who's coming for site-specific change. I can't say, oh, wait, I shouldn't vote on this. I should. And so I thought that was a really well-taken point, that we need a way to say, hey, I got a conflict. I don't want to recuse myself from the whole hearing, but on this issue, I shouldn't vote.
So you can abstain. That was one of the opinions that we got back from the prosecuting attorney, who looked at Tom's comments and did say that we can't, you know, you can't be prohibited from abstaining.
I'd be curious what that report was from them. I
which we haven't been privileged to that feedback that you got.
It's basically the comment from legal was that we shouldn't make this mandatory and that a planning commissioner may have a reason to abstain on a vote.
Yeah. What I'm thinking is oftentimes some of the reasons for being conflicted about a decision mm-hmm. might be that you would really make your mother-in-law very angry if you voted mm-hmm. one way or the other, and that could influence your vote. And sure. I think that that should be allowed to for a person to formally recuse themselves and maybe even step away from the bench for a while.
Yeah.
It's just that you may have been around here during the time we've had some conflicts with board members who had reasons to be, they should have been recusing themselves and have been away from here. But that didn't happen. I would just like to see something in our procedures that reminded people that it's their responsibility to come up with this early I'm out of here.
So my first comments were relative to the voting yes or no, right. where okay. we were required to vote yes or no. There is a more lengthy response with regard to item number one of your comments, which kind of, I think, deals with this. And some of the legal review of that was that the Planning Commission's actions are considered legislative in nature, and so are not subject to the appearance of the fairness doctrine. I'm kind of paraphrasing some of the information. Although there are site-specific land use reclassifications for comprehensive plan amendments that are somewhat of a gray area in their opinion, they meet kind of the quasi-judicial decision because it's a decision being made on the status of a specific parcel. And in those instances, it's typical that you would advise each planning commissioner to evaluate whether he or she has an interest or feels comfortable that they can make an objective decision on the matter, and that their decisions on site-specific applications should probably not be subject to challenge under the appearance of fairness doctrine. Now, that said, there was also consideration that if you feel like you are conflicted over a particular matter, that you can recuse yourself and that you should no longer participate in any of that, the hearing on that matter. So. That's typically done, as many of you may be aware, if there's, you know, if other people have any objections with that. So that's basically how you may feel like you can make an objective decision on something, and if anybody has any, you identify that potential issue, and other people, and you say, I'm going to stay in, I feel like I can make an objective decision, other people may object to that, and those are the cases where you might refuse. Somebody objects.
And that is how we've been dealing with it recently. If someone does, I said, that is how we've been dealing with it recently. I know that I think Aaron mentioned that. I mentioned that when you're going through the comp plan, because there were a couple of site specific items. And I did mention that I was working with, not on this particular project, but, mm-hmm. you know, and so, and just present it to the board and let, you know, the other members determine if they felt like there was a conflict or not, because there was no direct monetary tie to that particular item that we're hearing.
Yeah, because the conversation had been that, in theory, if you are not under a financial or contractual obligation yet, then it does come down to just, you know, being, I guess, transparent to say, hey, this client on this lot has approached me. We're not under contract, but I could financially benefit from a decision later. Then if you guys say, nah, I don't think you can be biased, then we'd recuse and step out.
I usually ask him if he's going to vote no.
Right.
Are we off the record now?
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's part of the procedure.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'd like to request that you review those before the next meeting, because I'm sure that Louisa would love to walk through these and make sure that we can move these to the board in about a month to get them adopted so they can go into practice.
Okay.
And I would also request that other planning commissioners read over the suggestions I've made and evaluate them as to whether they're worth considering or not. We may not be doing that. And in addition to that, if there are any suggestions that you might have that could be added to our procedures that would make our process and our product an improved product, please, you know, feel free. We are, we can influence our procedures. That's our job.
Yes. Jim?
Would it be appropriate to ask for the Planning Commission to be provided with copies of internal staff comments to suggestions and perhaps any other recent staff comments that have come up to this?
We can summarize the legal. That's privileged, so you won't see what came out of the prosecutor's office, but we can certainly summarize those responses for you. I honestly am stepping in at the 11th hour, so I wasn't part of the drafting of the new procedures, but I'll talk to Scott, Peter, and Louisa and see if there are comments that they have cycled through in developing this latest draft that's before you.
Speaking for myself, I would appreciate seeing them.
Sure.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order?
Just a quick one. What is the outlook for our agendas in the near future? What are we? I know we got through the comprehensive plan and a few other things.
Sure.
Every time we take a few weeks off, I'm kind of like, oh, great, here we go. Shoe's going to drop and we're going to be, oh, my God, get this done.
Well, don't worry about that anymore because it's going to definitely happen. I can assure you that. You don't have to be wondering. No, there are actually, in all seriousness, there are going to be some jam-ups. In fact, we're going to be talking to the board later this month about two major issues in my shop. One is the reasonable measures that need to be considered, and those were directed. The department was directed to work on those by the board back in August when they adopted some maximum lot sizes for urban growth areas. And through a series of staff turnover within our division, we've fallen behind schedule on that. So there was a commitment date of June 30th that we would come back to the board with some resolution on some of those. So that's one issue that is going to be coming, that you'll be looking at potential code changes and all the process that goes along with those kinds of things in terms of hearing and public review, et cetera. And we also have a critical area ordinance update that's coming. That's also due June 30th. So one of the things I'm trying to do with my staff, and we'll be taking this to the board, is really trying to reconcile the schedules so that we're not trying to cram too much into any one meeting. We may need to have, I would anticipate that some of the hearings associated with the critical area ordinance will be continued as they have in my past experience on working on critical area ordinances. We are looking at extending the schedule for the critical area ordinance. The county already asked for a one-year extension on that and was given that. That's allowed under statute. Right now, we're looking at what are the potential liabilities if we go beyond that, because one of the things that I see being problematic, and I think is contrary to direction and intent of the board, is that we would be reverse engineering to that June 30th deadline and would have to kind of condense all of the public comment and review period into the minimum amount of time, and we'd rather extend that time and maybe go a month longer or 2 months longer in the hopes that nobody jumps on us with an appeal for some kind of failure to act. Even if we did act on June 30th, we'd still have an appeal window that would be open until the end of August anyway. So we're trying to space things out as much as we can and try not to assume any additional liability in doing it. But those two are going to be big things. Then there's going to be a number of other smaller kind of housekeeping things that have come up since the comprehensive plan. I've gotten a lot of calls from people who had been having conversations with county staff over changes in zoning and reclassifications, and a lot of those would be dealt with typically through a comp plan amendment, annual comp plan amendment cycle. The board there hasn't even been a docket prepared for the board to consider that. I don't think they're too enthusiastic about opening up an amendment cycle just because we've just completed the comprehensive plan and we're still in review, but they may be willing to entertain some really constrained site specifics like a mineral overlay, those categories of kinds of site specifics, but they won't open it up like they would for a general annual comp plan review.
Aaron, do you have a comment?
Yeah, just that hopefully you do follow through on not stacking up minimum return times, because you got some pretty recent history to reflect on with backlash in that regard. So
I was working for another agency. I have no memory whatsoever of that.
Well, yeah, so listen to the tape and you'll agree to space them out.
We'll do our best.
Okay. Nothing else? All right. Thank you. Next meeting, what? 21st, right? Okay.
4 o'clock.
What? I'm sorry, 4 o'clock?
4 o'clock, and it's actually in the next door, the Port Blakely Conference Room.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what will happen then, don't you?
They're scribbled. Well, you know, someone that might get old, and I live south.
What happened was, I saw
please take over the entire county.
Yeah, I was offered more power from the chair on the new ordinance.